it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610, and it's a Friday, 11 o'clock, which means one thing, maybe not one thing alone, but it's one thing that I'm very happy about. We welcome in Brandon Scott to the hour. What's happening, man?
Man, y'all brought so many memories back with these cop stories, and I'm so glad that the Lord has delivered me into this place where I don't interact with the police at all these days, other than my retired cop father, you know, every several days or so. But yeah, man, I've got stories and stories upon days, but I can think of one that was actually really funny and like related to my dad being a cop. Okay, So at the time, he's still on the force at the time, and we are assigned to run an errand to Walmart. It's late at night. It's my girlfriend at the time who became my wife. Rest in peace. A shout out to her. We make this run to Walmart, okay, in my dad's car. All right. And on the way back, I get the you know, brilliant decision that I want to smoke a spliff at one of the parks nearby.
Yeah.
Not the park in my neighborhood, but a neighborhood that you have to pass by to get to mine. Right. You know, I'm in my early 20s, I don't want to do this at the parents' house. Out of respect, I'm just going to do this at the park real quick, okay? So I'm there doing my thing, and the police pull up drive-by style. Not like just riding around police in the
park. Slow down.
But you know the thing where the police is going less than 5 miles an hour, and they've got all their lights shut off. It's pitch black, okay? It's nighttime, pitch black. They got all their lights shut off. I'm talking about all traffic lights. All of their lights on the
everything.
Car shut off.
Yeah.
And then they see me. Whoop, whoop, speed up. Bright lights, everything. Okay, sirens and everything. They caught me. They caught me with half a spliff. Oh, my God, the world is over with. And so, of course, I try to, you know, throw it, tuck it, whatever, and get ready for this encounter. And they find it. They put me in the car and all of this other type of stuff. And immediately I realize I'm in my dad's car.
Yeah.
My dad, sometimes sloppily, would keep the 9 in the car.
Oh no.
So I said, hey, guys. I just need to, before you go look in the car, I need to tell you something. There's a gun in the car.
Oh, all right? My God.
There's a gun in the car, but it ain't mine.
Oh, no. That sounds worse.
Hey, yeah. But
I've never heard that before.
Hey, but here's how it's better. In fact, it's yours.
Yeah.
Because it's my dad's. Well,
good call by you.
It's my dad's departmental 9.
Yeah.
It's an HPD firearm.
Yeah.
So I said, actually, guys, it's your gun.
You said it like that?
I didn't say it exactly
I feel like the way that you rolled that out wouldn't have worked.
It's your damn.
I was doing that for the effect of the story.
Sure.
But what I told them was like, call my dad.
Yeah.
Call my dad. You know, I did the ultimate, like, hey, call my dad thing, right?
Yeah.
So he can kind of explain to you what's going on. And also, like, honestly, the reason why you don't want to probably take me to jail with your own gun as the evidence. Like, we just probably don't want to do this. We all probably just go home. And so when they see the gun, the guy immediately goes, cuff him. You know, cuff him and puts me in the car. All right. And so I'm like, guys, it's not my gun. I don't even know how to use a gun. I was trying to give him that whole bit, even though I did. And but, you know, trying to like make it clear this is not my gun. They call my dad. My dad is like super embarrassed by the whole thing because you're probably not supposed to keep the gun in the car, especially not the departmental gun.
Yeah.
And eventually I get to go home on cop kids privilege.
Yeah.
Even though I was definitely in the wrong, definitely doing something illegal, definitely doing something that could have gotten me put in jail.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually the fact that I had the gun on me.
It helped you.
That kind of helped me and saved me in this instance.
That is wild.
Yep.
I'm sure your dad didn't say anything about it.
Oh, he wasn't thrilled. He wasn't thrilled. But hey, take that gun in the house next time.
Yeah, that's right.
It's your fault.
Yeah. A little bit of wrong made a right in that instance. Yeah. That's weird.
Run your own Walmart errands.
All right, let's go around the NFL now. I don't know that is a precursor that I anticipated to talking about Jordan Love, but here we are. 27-18 victory for the Green Bay Packers. That, if I'm going to be entirely honest, did not feel nearly that close, especially because for me, I had forgotten something, and it literally took like the second drive or the second score that the Packers had where I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Matt LaFleur as play caller really eats Dan Quinn as defensive play caller's lunch, and it showed up once again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely did. And like, for me, I was actually surprised to see the final score because it was such a dominating performance to me. I actually punted on this early. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I can do something else with the rest of my night because this is a wrap. And so when I saw they actually kind of made it at least look
late, it was fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was garbage time stuff. They made it at least look as close as they did, even surprised me because I thought this was that dominating of a performance. I've been saying this since the Micah Parsons trade. I feel like this is the Jordan Love year now. Like, I feel like that just, like, it probably already would have been because we're talking about year three as the starter, you know, your time to emerge. But then they punctuated with the Micah Parsons trade. Now I'm like, man, they got all the pieces. Mm-hmm. Like, everything is coming together for them. And Jordan Love, to his credit, through these first 2 weeks of the season, has looked fantastic. And then to Reggie's point, you got one of the better play callers in all of football on top of it.
My whole thing all night long, and I mentioned it last week when the Packers were so dominant against the Lions, I've got serious FOMO with the Packers and Jordan Love. You mentioned it, year three, time to shine. Well, I mean, it's just great defense, a terrific play caller, a quarterback who's blossoming, a quarterback who's allowed to let it rip. I just feel like, that should be us.
You know what stood out to me about the game last night, and this wasn't until after the game that I really thought about this, kind of just reading over gamers and stuff like that at the end of the night. They were without two of their offensive linemen.
Yes, two linemen.
Yeah, and maybe this was pointed out throughout the game and I just wasn't paying attention closely enough, and I just didn't think about it. But it wasn't until I was like really reading it in print of like, man, they were without two offensive linemen. And who knew?
Yeah.
Who could tell? Like, what was the major difference? Why could you not tell as much? Because for one thing, the guys that stepped up clearly stepped up, you know, in a major way, but also the main pieces that matter, the quarterback, the play caller, they were all on point.
Mm-hmm. No, they absolutely were. Some other things that came out. Well, actually, I just want to start here because you mentioned Micah Parsons clearly made a big difference. And maybe this is also the other way that we can bring this back to the Texans, because Jaden Daniels, obviously now almost inextricably linked with CJ Stroud when we talk about quarterbacks. Is it possible that we're seeing somewhat of a similar trajectory early? Overreaction, get it, but that was not the best version by any means of Jaden Daniels that we saw. Obviously, that you look at the box score, and it's not nearly, it's not terrible. You have Jaden Daniels, 24-42, 200 yards, a couple of touchdowns. The QBR is rough. The passer rating isn't the best, and you saw him dealing with what was an incredibly effective pass rush by the Green Bay Packers in no small part because they have Micah Parsons getting quick pressure.
Yeah, but on the Jaden Daniels point, it is almost early, right? Only two games in, but it almost feels exactly like the C.J. Stroud situation, like almost to a T, where it's the numbers aren't as great. Even the performance is a little bit underwhelming for such a high standard that he set in the rookie year, which is the exact same thing that C.J. Stroud did. But he still looks pretty good. Like, he looks fine to me. Like, outside of some things that you could obviously nitpick and criticize, he still looks like that guy. Like, I even think about week one, where he wasn't amazing, but good enough. It reminds me a lot of how C.J. Stroud was last year, where he was still good. I would even argue very good, but not as good as the rookie year. And because of that, because of the own expectation and the own high standard that he had set for himself, it kind of left a lot to be desired.
And the big story being, you know, how is he going to progress over the course of the year? Because, you know, Figgy has talked multiple times about maybe they should have gotten a veteran, you know, play caller here rather than a first timer. You know, how is that going to play out in Washington with Jaden Daniels making the adjustments to the adjustments of his second year?
Yeah, and that's that's a big part of it. The adjustment to the adjustment, and then like we talked about with Jordan Love, and we're talking about with C.J. Stroud, year three is a lot of the times when we decide that. Okay, so they had that second year where there was the adjustment, and they needed to make the adjustment to the adjustment. Yeah. Now year three, all the cards are on the table. What this guy is, how the league is going to respond to them. Okay, what happens in year three? And so that's where we're at with C.J. Stroud, and that's where Green Bay's at with Jordan Love and him being in the third year being the starter.
Are they the best team outside of the Eagles, or are they better than the Eagles?
That, I think, remains to be seen because, like I said, I don't know how much I take for the Packers out of this one because of the schematic advantage that clearly remains there with Matt LaFleur and over Dan Quinn. They looked really good in this, and let Michael Parsons tell it, they have the opportunity to win a championship because he talked about it. Best in the NFL, like saying that and saying defense wins championships, obviously alluding to his addition to that Jeff Hafley defense. They look really good. I obviously want to see more of it, but it seems like they do have an opportunity at the very least to contend with the Eagles for being the best team in the NFC.
I don't want to minimize it because obviously we're talking about how impressive they looked last night, and they absolutely did. But when we talk about better than the Eagles or as good as the Eagles, next best than the Eagles, it's hard to not think back to that Buffalo Ravens, that Ravens Buffalo game and feel like one of those teams was like, they got to be it.
Yeah.
And it could be because they got those guys, but that's, you know, big reason why I'm highlighting.
I was thinking more NFC, but
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I just, when you say outside the Eagles, I'm thinking, I immediately go to that, to that game. But in the NFC, I think for a while it had been the Lions, and clearly, you know, we saw what the Packers did to the Lions. We got our questions about what they look like without their coordinators, even with a lot of their players that were injured back. And the Packers look like the flavor of the month with good reason right now.
Well, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year, which is like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. I'm glad you mentioned that Ravens-Bills game because, interestingly enough, the defensive coordinator for the Ravens made mention of why he believed that there was a little bit of a defensive collapse there. Zach Orr said that the team's defenders were, quote, mentally and physically wore out after after the end of the contest. Fair or foul, gentlemen, especially in a week one matchup that you knew was coming?
I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot.
I think it's fair.
I think it's fair. Yeah, I do. I think it's fair as well. Like, it sounds
87 snaps after, you know, everybody knows how the preseason is played out these days.
34 in the fourth quarter alone.
Yeah.
It sounds like excuse making, but it's also easy. It would be easy for me to say, right, as somebody that's not tasked with doing this on a weekly basis or this being your job. Like, it is a lot that is demanded upon them, and I think that it's fair.
See, and that's kind of tricky, too, because I feel like – I think it was – what was the play where John Harbaugh didn't go for it? He punted the ball
back. Fourth and three.
Yeah, and that's the drive after they
– at that point, if I know my defense is kind
of
gas, I got to try to run the ball with Lamar or Derrick Henry to try to end this game because I can't put my defense back out
there. Derrick Henry. He's easy to tackle.
That was one of the clear criticisms, and, of course, you set me up perfectly there, John Lopez. In this continued NFL, around the NFL, fair or foul, Grant Delpit, defensive player for the Browns, defensive back, that is, said that Derrick Henry is not hard to tackle. Derrick Henry's response? We'll see on Sunday.
Yeah, we will.
Whose side do you sit on? Is it fair or foul that what Grant Delpit says about the one that they call King Henry?
Yeah, and Mount Everest isn't hard to climb. Like, let's just go down the list of the things that are actually really hard to do, and let's say that they're not. I would like to think that Grant Delpit is trying to psych himself out or trying to convince himself of that, because, like, what do you want Grant Delpit to do to just be, like, overwhelmed and just in awe of the fact that he's
going to be? Well, you can say, he's always a tough challenge. No, you know how it's played.
Yeah, you can say that, but you can also say what you want.
Yeah.
And apparently this is what he wanted to say, and this is how he wants to play it. But what Derrick Henry said.
It's
also the truth, though. Like, when they did that Ravens documentary maybe a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago, about the 2000 Ravens, there was a quote from Shannon Sharpe in there about how, you know, the thing I love about football is that we get to talk throughout the week, but come Saturday or Sunday, you got to show me.
Yeah.
Like, all of that talk, all this talking that we doing on a football Friday is fun, it's good, but the great thing about football is that you actually got to go out there and do it and show it and put your money where your mouth is, and so he's going to get an opportunity to do that.
A couple of notes. Austin Ekeler, who, if you're watching that game, you saw he went down and it felt pretty evident what happened. Unfortunately, those suspicions were correct. Torn Achilles, which sucks because he's had that before, if memory serves.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and he's an older running back. This feels like this could be the end for him. And the tough part about life and sports sometimes is that what is clearly a terrible thing for one person can be a great thing for another. Jacory Kroski-Merritt feels like this is going to be an opportunity for him to jump up into a real, you know, real place of producing for the Commanders. And then also, Jaden Reed will miss 6 to 8 weeks with the broken collarbone on the other side for the Packers there. So a couple of injuries that are being dealt with on those side for both of those teams. And then Ed Oliver will not play versus the Jets week two, since we were not talking about the Bills earlier.
Yeah, no, all of those injuries that you mentioned are, I think, significant for their teams, like to be without any of those players for a while. But the Austin Ekeler thing, really, like, personally for me, observing it, it's wild to go from like thinking about something that doesn't really matter to something that does really matter, like what you illustrated. Because before he got injured, I was thinking about Tyler's best bets at the end of the night or at the end of their show that they do, Tyler's mm-hmm. best bets. He had like the over on Austin Eckler receiving yards, and I don't think Austin Eckler got anywhere close
wow.
to it. Like, he was nowhere close to it, right? Yeah. And so I'm thinking about that, which is a trivial thing. It has something to do with our station and our shows or whatever. And then he goes down with this serious injury, and I'm like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
That's actually significant. Not Tyler's a low bet. Sorry, Tyler. But, like, this dude who's been injured before is now injured again in a significant way. It's really tough to watch.
Yeah, real quick before we go around the NFL, this is an injury note that pertains to your Houston Texans. Luke Goedeke, I'm pretty sure I said his name wrong. I never remember how to say it. He is the right tackle that just got paid big money for the Buccaneers. He's not practicing again today.
Is Wirfs, because that's the one I wanted to watch. Was Wirfs did...
Wirfs was, I think he was a limited participant yesterday. So he could return, but mm-hmm. I mean, you also... if you
gotta
look this is the other tackle on the other side that might not play for the Bucs. In fact, it seems more and more likely that he won't play. So maybe... I'd be interested in seeing what their offensive line shuffle might be, because they already moved their center, Graham Barton, to tackle last week. So they've got some things that we're going to have to see, and that might portend some big things for the Texans' defensive line.
Tristan Wirfs is practicing, but still somewhat in the air, you know, if he's going to play.
I'm just keeping note of how every other team, at least the ones that take themselves seriously, how every other team is dealing with these offensive line issues or these injury issues when they got to shuffle guys around. How does it look? Versus how it looks here locally in Houston.
Yep.
And it is worth monitoring.
Yeah, and we'll have an opportunity to see it very, very close on Monday. That is 6 p.m. You'll hear right here on Sports Radio 610. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. We still got our guy B. Scott in the studio, and when we do, we got to get his thoughts. We'll get those next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, man, your football Fridays are always fun when we get B. Scott in the studio. B. Scott from Hiram Clark joining us. And I just wanted to give you a little bit of a programming note before I hand things to B. Scott here and let we can get his thoughts. The football Friday will be even football-y and Friday-er when you catch up with the fellas of the drive. They'll be at BB's right there off of 99 and Katy. Go out and see them. Go out and get your commemorative pint glass this week. It'll have
these guys.
John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and my faces on it. But also at 2:30, you'll be able to hear from Daniil Hunter jumping on with the fellas. So I believe it through 2:30 or whenever you're able to get him off of the practice field.
Yeah.
Sometimes that can vary. But Daniil Hunter should be joining the fellas. And I want to hear B. Scott's thoughts on that and whatever else he's got.
Yeah, so in the spirit of Football Friday, I'm really thinking about it. Reggie, you'll really appreciate this. All of us will.
I was like, what did I do?
But like, because it's a little football nerdy, if you will. But I'm really interested to see how this Texans offense responds to such an underwhelming effort against the Rams on the road and how it looks at home, but against a very, very worthy opponent on the defensive side of the ball. Just in terms of how they attack you,
mm-hmm.
I was looking back at some of the coverage of the Bucs-Falcons opener and some of the things that the Falcons ran into, the issues that the Falcons ran into with the Bucs defense, and you could say it's a kind of a chicken or the egg thing. Like, was it their approach,
mm-hmm.
or was it the Falcons that me saying their approach, or was it the actual Bucs defense itself, or was it just both? But the Falcons intentionally did more between the tackles because for whatever reason they thought that that's what they could exploit. The Falcons have Bijan Robinson, who's great with stretch plays. An athletic beast. If you followed him through Texas and obviously his career so far with Atlanta, like the dude's kind of a mm-hmm. physical freak, right? And they probably do better. And at least in that offense, they like to run a lot of stretch plays. But in this instance, mm-hmm. they tried to run between the tackles a little bit more. And every time they did it, there was a tell with how they shaded the tight end, the Bucs linebackers and their mm-hmm. safeties were able to basically follow wherever this tight end went was where
the run
play was essentially going to go. And for the most part, Tampa Bay was able to sniff that out a great deal. And the only time that they didn't the Bucks ended up, or I'm sorry, the Falcons ended up having a really good play, and it got called back on a penalty. Like the one time that they solved the riddle, yeah. They ended up getting it called back on a penalty. So I say all that to say, like, are we going to see what's the...
It's a Nick Chubb day is what you're saying.
It's a Nick Chubb day, but is it Nick Chubb between the tackles? Mm-hmm. Is it more of a stretch run play? And I have not done the research to see how much the Texans actually ran between the tackles versus stretch. I would imagine, since it was a lot of Nick Chubb.
It was a lot of in the tackles.
It was actually, a lot in the tackles.
This is very much... It's funny that you mentioned this, because I was doing a lot of looking at this on Wednesday, weirdly enough. But yeah, the Texans, so much running in between the tackles compared to last year, which was obviously a lot of outside with the outside zone stuff that they were doing. Still, you had some some inside zone that was mm-hmm. happening still, even with some of the duo that they were having, but it was a lot inside the tackles.
So this is what I'm getting at. The Texans clearly want to run between the tackles with Nick Chubb and this new offense that they got. And mm-hmm. want to establish this physical brand of football, this new style, and all of this kind of stuff under Nick Caley. The Bucs, notably,
yeah.
are very good at defending the run, specifically between the tackles. And so what's going to give? Feels like something's got to give. Do they try to run a little bit more stretch with Nick Chubb? We've already heard them talk about maybe feeding Nick Chubb more so than they did
yeah.
in the previous game with the running back by committee thing. But also in my mind, I'm like, I like Woody Marks a little bit better mm-hmm. on some of these stretch plays.
That's exactly where I was going.
So I'm interested to see how they play it. Because I kind of got my ideas of how they should. Like, I feel like there should be more Woody Marks, less Damian Pierce, less Dari Ogunbowale, and do your between-the-tackle stuff mostly with Nick Chubb. Do your stretch stuff mostly with Woody Marks, and let that be, for the most part, your running back rotation unless somebody gets injured or is extremely tired or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So how do they play that is one of the things that I'm really going to be monitoring.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm with you, and I think I'm with you in terms of the rotation. A lot of Nick Chubb. I would love to see Woody Marks. The boys in the morning were saying the same thing as the number two guy. Are you there too? No more Damian Pierce? Hell, Sean even said maybe even don't make him active.
Yeah, oh, well, I don't know about not making him active just because of how fragile the yeah. position can be, right?
Like
yeah.
it
can
be a car crash sport.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a car crash sport. So I would like to at least have somebody that has some experience active, but I will say I reluctantly agree. I mm-hmm. hate to be in this place. I don't want to be in this place. I want to be where Andre Ware was a year ago. I want to be in the space of I don't need him to be the same guy that he
Not
was,
even
Andre.
That.
I don't need
Not
him to be I just need him to be a reliable spell back,
yeah.
like a reliable option. A second or third option, and I don't know if they actually have that. I'm not trying to say that Damian Pierce was awful. Him dropping that pass was not a very good look. But it does feel like wasted downs.
Yeah.
It feels like wasted downs when you give him the ball and when you design plays for him, especially late in the game, like mm-hmm. the Pierce Ogunbowale stuff. This is nothing against either one of them.
Why really. Are they on the field?
Why are they on the field, and why do they feel like first options on mm-hmm. plays mm-hmm. on gotta have it drives and gotta have it plays when it's nut cutting time? I don't get that part.
I feel like I can give you a better answer on the latter question than the former. Well, I guess the former I get to, at least with Dare, is, well, it's a passing down, so he's the passing down back. That
yeah.
seems like that's pretty evident to get to. Should he be?
Yeah,
that's a question.
I don't get it.
Now, with the other one, which what was the latter question again? I don't talk myself.
Why are you getting the ball when it's nut cutting time?
Oh, yeah. Well, some of that is just CJ is going through his progressions really, really fast, and then he gets to that check down real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. That was one of the things that felt like watching the passing plays. I went and watched all the passing plays more in service of trying to see how and when they could have gotten Nico the ball.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, wow, he is. Some of the times he was not getting to Nico was because he was going 1-2, like 1-2-3, yeah. and then boom, like, let's get this out. And I do wonder if that slows down a little bit. We were talking about that earlier this mm-hmm. week. If he maybe slows down, especially in his, all right, let's see for extra beat if I can get this ball there. But all of that seems like it's also a factor of how much does CJ trust this offensive line, because it didn't feel like he had much of the trust early on in week one.
Yeah, no, it definitely didn't seem like it. Even though I didn't feel like the offensive line was terrible, specifically in pass pro, I didn't feel like they were terrible.
No, but it didn't matter if it was actually. It mattered what was going through his brain.
Right. Well, then that's what I'm saying. Like the reality, the perception and the reality weren't necessarily the same from what I could tell. Now who knows how much CJ would be validated in that both off of their previous performance last year. And if you just want to isolate it to the new look offensive line, the fact that they weren't always great even in training camp, in the times and since he's been with these guys. But it does bring me to, like, the point that you're making, bring me to, without trying to oversimplify, because I think you did a good job of explaining the nuance there of maybe why we didn't see as much Nico Collins and him, you know, kind of check down Charlie in the game a little bit. They got to unleash this guy, man. Without oversimplifying it and at the risk of oversimplifying it, Matthew Stafford spread the ball around pretty good, but you know who still found the ball? Guys like Puka Nacua and Davante Adams. They didn't spread the ball around at the risk of not finding matchup problems for those guys. And so, like, as a play caller, as a designer in Nick Caley, and then as a quarterback who has to execute the play call and design in C.J. Stroud, and as y'all were talking about earlier in the show, as somebody who's been given extra authority and vision and all of these other things to be allowed to dictate at the line of scrimmage of what these plays are going to look like, they've got to figure that out. Like, for me, if you're looking at the Texans, like, just juxtapose the Texans and the Rams for a second. The Rams look like they had a little bit more of a supporting cast around whoever you want to call their number one guy, whether that's Davante Adams or Puka Nacua.
Mm-hmm.
The Texans, absent of Christian Kirk, absent of Braxton Berrios, and absent of their starting offensive line, they didn't seem like they had a whole lot of options outside of Nico Collins and a little Hutch here and a little Dalton Schultz there. Like, you cannot afford to, if this is what your offense looks like right now personnel-wise, to allow the other team to take Nico Collins out of the game, especially the type of player that he is.
Well, he's going to get a lot of looks. I don't know how many, you know, they're going to be able to convert. By the way, just a real quick side note, I was just looking it up. Luke Goedeke, like you said, doesn't look like he's going to play. That means one Charlie Heck is going to step in.
Oh, good for Charlie.
At right
tackle. I've heard of that name.
Yeah, how about that? So just a little note there, very familiar face here. No, but he's right, and I know you've been looking at me like you got something important to say, so I can't
wait. I don't know how important
it is. I can't wait.
He
gave me head up, looking down look.
Yeah, no, that's just how my brain works. Where I go.
Everything that Reggie says is important.
You know when you tilt your head back and you look down?
You know what it really is?
You got something important to
say?
Lay that importance on his ridge.
You know how you go when your brain is like, or when you're like, I need to sneeze, and your head naturally goes up? My brain does that with, like, thoughts. Yeah. Okay. I'm like, I got to hold this.
You can see the thought bubble formulating in his head.
So I'll keep it as tight as possible. Hey, this truly is to just kind of funnel it down into one thought. You gotta are you going to let CJ let it rip?
Well, Reginald
Adatula is typing. I can just see that in the
I'm
chat
glad
right now.
You said that, John Lopez. Because the question I was gonna throw to you guys is, at what point does CJ Stroud put the bass in his voice to where he just goes, bleep whatever y'all are letting me do? We have a lot of conversation.
You gotta let him let it rip sometime.
Well, we've had a lot of conversation about, oh, there's more responsibility, he has more free reign. But at what point does he start doing, and I know this name isn't one you want to bring up, but Aaron Rodgers stuff where he just goes at the line, leave it, this is where we're running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, actually, you know what? This is the call play from the sideline.
Don't listen to them.
Run that nine right quick. Nico, run that nine right quick.
Maybe not in the first or hopefully more so in the second game, but I could see it not being in the first couple of weeks of just now regaining this quote unquote power, if that's what we want to call it. Like, we talk about how C.J. Stroud used to do it like this. Well, used to was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Like, he's been in the league now. This is his third season. So for the past two seasons of him playing football, this has not been a thing that he does.
Yeah.
So readjusting and getting used to this again, to this part of it again, I think there's going to be a learning curve and there's going to be a process here. But at the same time, I didn't feel like C.J. Stroud had maybe three, four plays that you might want to have back in this game. But by and large, I thought he was fine. I thought that for the most part, it was a combination of things. Not having your full plethora of weapons. Always, like, the one step forward, two step back of the penalties. Like, the penalties were a major issue for them. C.J. Stroud a lot of times got them out of, like, when the penalties would hurt drives, C.J. Stroud a lot of times would fix it. But then,
is that in the bag?
But then there's the pick that, you know, I didn't necessarily agree was a pick. But it was a pick nonetheless, right? And so, like, you had a lot of that, of C.J. Stroud bailing him out, and then not too long after he bailed him out, there's a play that he wants to have back. Mm-hmm. So everything needs to kind of come together for them.
Man, B. Scott's thoughts. There's a number of things that I'm going to search a little bit deeper on. I don't know if you could see me, fellas, as I was actively going through the next gen stats, trying to get some more insight on something, because that running inside outside thought is such an interesting one, because that feels like it's going to be a real test of how game plan your game plan on offense actually is.
Yep.
Are you going to do the tried and true, or are you going to go to where the early instances of the numbers might point to?
Yeah, I want
to
see it. I want to see it.
Interesting. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we'll keep going with B. Scott, get to what's popping, including this feels like it's going to be a real fun weekend in the sports world. I'll tell you why next. All right, let's get into what's popping here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. We got B. Scott from Hiram Clark in the studio with us, as we always do. And it's a fun Football Friday, which will continue on after we get off the air with the fellas of the drive out there at, it's BB's, I believe, out there on 99. Go out and say what's up to the fellas. That will have Daniil Hunter on the broadcast after practice, I believe at 2:30. Don't quote me on that.
Why can't we quote you on that?
Yeah, no, in pencil, not pen.
Because it's, you know, everything is fluid, man. We're working off of this. I don't know. Did you grow up in the church at all? Because growing up in the church, we had the as the spirit leads timing, yeah, where it's like, oh, yeah, this supposed to happen. Yeah. But as the spirit leads, which means if this gets moved around,
but let y'all go shakes, 10 minutes. Give me 10 more minutes.
If the praise and worship leader decides we're doing an hour as opposed to 30, mm-hmm, well, then we're going to be 30 minutes late.
Hey, but that's also why as an adult I started going to white churches. Because they be on time.
On time, bro. Baby.
Hey,
the sermon is 25 minutes.
Yep.
Praise and worship is 15.
Yep.
We're going to take this offering. We're going to send you on your way.
They have a director that's producing with that time clock.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. Hey, cut this hem short. We running low. We running behind.
Or go to the earlier service if there's a second service, because they got to get out there to get the second service people in. So even black churches hold to that.
That's the best call right there. Go to the early service.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They're not gonna mess up that second service, because all of this money got to get here.
So what did we learn today? Sometimes the Texans operate like a black church.
Yeah.
That's what we learned today. I think that's what we just said.
Who knew?
But yeah, go hang out with the fellas. Going to be giving away the commemorative pint glasses that we have for all the Football Fridays. A limited supply, one per person. So you want to make sure you get out there early. Two, maybe earlier than two.
And it's our images on the glasses.
Yes, in the loop glasses this week. Which means next week you'll get the drive glasses. But
you can drink a pint of me.
No. How about we don't?
Moving forward, what's popping? We got big time college football.
Is that not right?
On the docket tonight in the city of Houston. University of Houston welcomes in the Colorado Buffaloes.
It is tonight.
That is a big time game. If you're out there, go see Figgy Fig. He will be around. Make sure you say what's up to the man.
I'm boating over there as soon as it's show.
You got your UH football shirt on.
I do, man.
Yeah.
Are you guys as excited as I am? Like, I'm genuinely excited about this football game. What are y'all's excitement level for this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, pretty hot, man. Like, so, of course, I'm a little biased with the Cougs now because Willie Fritz is the coach. Willie Fritz was the coach of Sam Houston State when I went there. So, I know Willie. I know his daughter. So, like, I am personally invested.
That humble bragging there.
No, but before.
Well, his daughter worked here for a while.
She worked, but I went to before that.
Yeah.
We went to school together.
Yeah. So you go way back.
That's what I'm saying. Like, before
you don't know Lopez.
I'm just saying. Before she was anything.
You don't know her like I know her.
Before, man, I wish I was there. Get in line.
Hey, yo. Hey, hey.
I'm just saying. Like,
hey, Willie, don't come see us about it. We were just talking.
Willie was there. Willie knew. Willie was well aware of the situation and what was going on. And there was a long line before I was going
to
be there. Just to be honest.
You had to say long.
I'm not saying that everybody made it to the other side of the line. I'm just saying it was a lot of us in the line, and I was somewhere in the back. You know what I'm saying? Way, way, way in the back. But I say all that to say that I'm personally invested in his success, want to see him do well. So, yeah, so these are effectively two of my favorite coaches in the world, because you got Willie Fritz, who I feel like I kind of have a personal connection to. And then the Deion Sanders thing. I don't love everything about the Deion Sanders experience in Colorado, but I cannot deny that it's been a success, and that it's interesting, and that it's fascinating, and that it's good for the game, and that he's entertaining, Deion. Mm-hmm. And so you got Deion on one side that's like got this national appeal, and then Willie, who has an obvious local appeal and then more of a specific personal appeal to me. I want to see these two teams clash. And, of course, U of H, starting the season off 2-0, good for them, and trying to, you know, right some wrongs here. Mm-hmm. So I'm very much intrigued by the matchup.
And one of the fascinating things about this is you did a great job laying out kind of the people involved. You did miss one big person who is prominent in this, and that's Ryan Staub, who will be taking on the mantle of starting quarterback for the Colorado Buffaloes. And what makes him interesting is he's a dude who's been in that program. And it almost doesn't fit the ethos of what it feels like Deion Sanders' whole career has been, which is the transfer quarterback. Now, of course, a lot of times that transfer quarterback was his son, but that's been what he's working with. So as we go into the post-Shador era of Deion's coaching career, what is he capable of doing? Interestingly enough, with a guy that he didn't really recruit in Ryan Staal, but then also just like, what are they going to do, especially against Houston, who Willie Fritz is developing a defense that we have to see how good it actually is. They did a fantastic job keeping up with the triple option offense that Rice threw at them. They looked pretty good. They've looked good to this point, but this is going to be their first real test. This is going to be the first stress test of Willie Fritz after year zero of sorts, where he was trying to get the foundation for Houston. How real are they early on? This is going to be real fun.
And the other thing that it doesn't fit is they signed a five-star quarterback at Colorado, four-star, whatever.
Caden Salter, who started the season.
Yeah, and all of a sudden this guy comes in. So clearly, you're right, it doesn't quite fit what Deion, you know, normally does. But Deion also, at first I thought he was sort of playing possum because he went off on for about 5 minutes about Willie Fritz and the program earlier this week. Like, what a great guy, what a job he's doing, nothing but respect. And I'm like, is he playing possum? No, I think he really has a lot of respect for that dude.
Which is interesting because, again, they're kind of diametrically opposed. Mm-hmm. Deion Sanders has been transfer portal Jesus of sorts early on in his tenure as a you know, power conference head coach. Mm-hmm. Willie Fritz is a program builder. And notice I didn't say program. Program builder. Yeah. And I think that that's kind of different. And it's interesting to see all of those things clash tonight, 6:30 at TDECU Stadium.
Yeah, old school coach, though, also. Willie Fritz is from a different era. You know, so he's from the era where this is how you build the program. And that's not to say he's reluctant to get transfers, but this is how he's more oriented. Whereas Deion is a coach of this era, right? Like, you know, we're several years into the Deion coaching experience now, but he's at the forefront of this, or one of the coaches that's at the forefront of the change in the guard of how college football just works in general, from the transfer portal to the guys being, some of them being millionaires. Obviously, his son is a great example of that. So, yeah, no, I think it's an interesting dichotomy between coaches, but I'm glad you bring up the on-the-field part, because the issue with Deion Sanders and the post-Shador era was going to be a question, even if they were still going with the quarterback that they started the season with. Now they're making a quarterback change. And of course, if you've been following throughout the week, even that headline itself has been a point of contention, because there was a report out there about him changing the quarterback, and then Deion refuted it. And now it turns out said that he hadn't made the decision yet, but it turns out that's exactly what he's going
to
do.
Well, he said he hadn't made the decision, but he had also agreed to the fact that he had changed quarterbacks in practice.
That's such a weird
way to handle that.
Yeah, no, the whole thing is weird. And this is one of the things that I haven't necessarily loved about Deion and how he kind of handles the press. Feels like he, at times, can be a little bit, I use the term bully very, very lightly, because I'm not trying to be overly sensitive about it. But it's captivating. It's interesting. It creates some type of intrigue. This is the story that I've been following throughout the week about the Colorado U of H matchup is what are they going to do at quarterback, or is this story real and all that kind of stuff. And then the larger story of post-Shador Deion and what exactly that looks like.
And I that's interesting. I don't want to neglect U of H in any of this. And it's fair, this 832 texter, not necessarily thrilled about the Cougs passing attack. Hope they can iron that out. Obviously, Connor Wegman is there. He showed the wheels. But if you just look at their offensive success, the offensive side is where Houston, both passing and rushing, leaves something to be desired. Can they show up against a not-so-great defense against Colorado? That's also another subset of this, so keep that out. But when it comes to sports, I'm going to make this statement, and it's going to sound grandiose, but I wonder if you guys will agree. Not much moves the needle in sports as like a single-day event outside of like the Super Bowl than big-time boxing fights on a weekend, and this weekend we have one of those.
I'd agree with that.
Saul Canelo Alvarez versus Terrence Bud Crawford in Las Vegas. They're playing at the Roomba. They're playing at Allegiant Stadium, or fighting rather, at Allegiant Stadium. This is going to be a huge step up in weight class for Terrence Crawford.
His fourth title potentially?
I mean, he's trying to go and get Canelo, putting up his pretty stellar record. But he's the headliner, Canelo, and he's had power, although of late the power hasn't looked as good, but I wonder if that doesn't matter if you're dealing with the Terrence Crawford that's coming up a number of weight classes to try and come up. Will his power translate is one of those questions. I'm super intrigued by this fight.
Yeah, and as am I, for the same exact reasons. But also, an added benefit to it for me, my son, my 10-year-old son, who can't get his head out of either a phone or a video game, is actually the first person to mention this fight to me a long, long time ago.
Oh, really? Good for him.
He was like, man, I can't wait to watch this. And I'm like, since when are you going to sit down and watch a live sporting
and
event?
And is it an, did I see this right? It's an afternoon fight?
Yeah. So
yeah.
Why are they doing that?
It's Netflix.
On a Saturday?
It's a Netflix situation.
College football
there.
Season?
Yeah, maybe so my son can watch. No, I don't know. It
I thought I saw that. I thought it was a typo because you know I thought okay after all the college football, 10 o'clock at night. You know, let's the check.
No, actually the fight is it's the evening. I think you're thinking about
maybe
another
undercards.
Fight. That's I think it's a Riyadh fight that you're thinking about because and that's the reason why is when they fight in Saudi Arabia. No, this one start Netflix 9 p.m. Eastern time is when the undercards start. No, this one will be a night event. I was like I'm mixing up some of because we're starting to come up on some big fights here in the fall. That are popping up. But yeah, no, this one is an evening. This is going to be truly Las Vegas and it's a big time fight. However, Canelo is still heavy favorite, -180, almost a 2-1 favorite. And he should be like, he's fighting at a weight class. That's more his own. He's got a strong chin. He's at least historically had more of the power, but Bud Crawford is a dog of a fighter. So if there was anybody that I'd give a chance to kind of step up in class this way and maybe try and crack Canelo, I think I'd ride with Bud a little bit.
Yeah, but you still, for the reasons that you mentioned about Canelo, man, and it feels a little sacrilege for me to kind of be going with Canelo. Like, let's just say my heart's with Crawford and my head with Canelo, if you know what I mean.
That's true to boxing. That's actually combat sports. That's how they sell their fights. They sell it on racial animus. You don't have to hide from that.
Yeah,
that's real. But yeah, it's going to be hard.
Come on,
for
man.
You
got to be objective here.
It's going to be hard for you to ride with the home team here.
Objectively, who I think is going to win. But my heart.
Somebody said 3-4-6. All the Canelo fights can drink all night when we win. You're still going to be able to do that, but it will be later in the evening. All right. See, we're not gonna have any discord on this one, Lopez. Right? We're gonna be okay. We're gonna make our way through this fight and be all right.
I hate both of you. Okay, three of you.
That's fair. That's how boxing go.
Here we go.
All right, that's a little bit of what's popping this weekend. And I guess actually I should do this. Rest in peace to the SaberCats. It was announced that the Houston SaberCats rugby team is folding, which was sad. I was looking forward to them coming back, especially after they were this close. They got to the championship game, didn't win it, but appreciate the SaberCats. That sucks.
They're a fun bunch, man.
They had their own stadium.
Yeah.
They had their own, you know, they were good.
Funny enough, that was what I thought of first, is like what happens with that stadium and complex that I know the Dynamo used to practice and stuff, but that's neither here nor there.
They got cool gear.
The really cool gear.
The gear looked real good.
Yeah, man.
The gear looked real good.
Hate to see it.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. B. Scott, always, always a blast when we have an opportunity to have you in studio. Thank you. Fine, sir. All right, coming up next, CJ was at the mic yesterday after practice. He said a couple of things that piqued my interest. I'm interested to see how you see them. 713-572-4610. We'll run that next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him. And they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right. And the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.